Welcome to the Candy Valentino Show, the podcast for founders, investors, and entrepreneurs, where we have honest conversations about what it takes to grow your business, build more wealth, and create financial freedom.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Candy Valentino Show. Thank you so much for tuning in with me today and spending this time together. Today, you're in for a treat as we get to interview the youngest founder on record, not just was, but is the youngest founder of a publicly traded company, Dan Fleischman. After multi-millions in his first business in his 20s, Dan became an investor to over 43 companies that range from mobile apps and tech companies, food companies, consumer packaged goods, and even celebrity clothing brands. Not only has he had an incredible journey as an entrepreneur, but he also has supported dozens of charities and has two that he's highly involved in right now, which we talk about on the show. But one of the most fascinating things obviously, there's a lot. Anybody that has done as much as Dan has in their career has a ton of value to share. And we get into it all. We get into marketing tactics that you can use right now to increase your sales. We talk about the things that you could be doing on your website and in your offers in order to increase your sales and your buying frequency. But one of the coolest things that we talked about was how in just 1 minute with one phone call, he lost a company that was doing multiple millions of dollars in revenue, and we get to talk about what he does next, as well as if everything evaporated tomorrow, what would he do to build it all back? It's a fascinating interview, and Dan is one of those people who I love to interview because he doesn't just say a lot of words. He has a lot of wisdom in his words. So buckle up, grab a pen, and tune in to this interview with the incredible Dan Fleischman. Guys, welcome back to another episode of the Candy Valentino Show. Thank you so much for tuning in and spending this time with me today. I know that you can be doing anything in the world right now, and you are investing in yourself, in your business, and in your bottom line by being here. So thank you so much for joining us and being able to join my guest today, Dan Fleischman. Thank you so much for coming today.
Me. Timing's perfect.
Yes, timing was so perfect. We've been trying to do this, and you have such an incredible story, not just your backstory, what you're doing now, and I certainly want to get into all of that and unpack it, but as we were just talking off air, I'd love to talk a little bit about some current events if you're down for it.
Absolutely.
So I don't know if you're a data nerd like me, but I follow, you know, the U.S. World Report, the BBC. Like, I'm always just trying to find out what's going on in the world and not just our little ecosystem of entrepreneurship. Yeah. And as you probably know, you know, consumer debt is at an all-time high. For the first time in over a decade, FICO scores just reduced by a point. And we've got all of this now issues with some consumer spending. And I'm just curious how you feel in your experience that this may or may not water down to entrepreneurs and their small businesses.
So the reason that consumer spending is up is that
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
Everything's more expensive. You know, when you're dealing with 8%, 9% a year inflation, and it's been for multiple years in a row, if bread was $3, now it's $4, and milk was $3, now it's $4, and gas was $2, now it's $4 and $5, people are just spending more money. And so it's not, I don't think their spending habits are changing that much, because I think people are actually looking at like, why am I making more or making the same, but I have less? Your dollar spends less, literally.
Yeah.
Not a theory, not a conspiracy, just math. Mm-hmm. Like when you try to buy a Ford truck for $50,000 and now it's $54,000, that's 8%, 9% more. Mm. When you try to buy muffins for $4, now they're $5, those are expensive muffins. And so just like the money that you're spending, it just spends harder. And so when we see things like, oh, people are getting deeper in debt, they're probably spending the same exact amount, but 8 or 9% more expensive year after year.
What is your opinion of what business owners can do now, knowing that? I 100% agree with you. And I think that was such a beautifully simply put of what's going on. What are some of the things that you think entrepreneurs can do now coming into this second quarter of the year, the second half of the year, in order to maybe, whether it's reestablishing their marketing or their positioning, in order to come into this economy, as opposed to maybe what they've been doing for the last several years?
Can I be blunt?
Yes.
Sales cures all. Mm-hmm. They need to sell more. And too often they're like figuring out, how can I cut this? How can I do that? How can I reduce this? How can I reduce that? That's important. But what if you just sold more? What if you had somebody in your office, whether it's you or an assistant or a salesperson, just make 5, 10, 20 more calls per day. Make 5, 10, 20 more emails per day. Mm-hmm. Like every single day, make more sales. And guess what will happen? Marketing department gets happy. Customers are happier. Your vendors are happier. Your clients are happier. Your manufacturers are happier. Everyone in your office is happier. Your investors are happier. Your partners are happier. Everyone is happier if you just sold more. Mm-hmm. And people don't spend enough time doing more sales. And if you're doing good sales, do more. You're doing kind of okay, do more. You're doing amazing, do more. Like, just do more sales and you can fix a lot of things within your company.
What do you think are some of the marketing triggers right now that are working? And do you think they're evolving, or do you think that it's always the same no matter what the economy is doing, that there's just tried and true things that work?
The tried and true thing that works better than anything is free shipping. Mm. People will leave, they'll literally abandon carts if they have to pay for shipping. So I'd rather you increase your price by $5, $10, $15, $20, $25, whatever shipping costs. You can also make it a profit center. Your shipping might be $12, make it $15 to $20. Like, you can make money from that. But free shipping literally changes your entire ecosystem when you're doing a checkout. The consumer would rather pay more for something. Let's say that shirt is $80. They'd rather pay $85 or $90, $95 or $100 mm-hmm. rather than pay $80 plus $12 in shipping.
Yep.
It's just a game in our minds and people don't use it enough. They do discounts and 20% off and 10% off. We're numb to 10% off. Mm-hmm. 10% off and 20% off, that does not do anything for the consumer. Candy's not like, oh yeah, now I'll buy it. Yep. But if candy's like about to check out and it's $280 plus $45 in shipping, candy has a first reaction like, I don't know. That's a lot, right? But if it was just $325 with free shipping and free is in capital mm-hmm. F-R-E-E, candy's going to purchase. And so the mental mindset, the consumer mindset of getting free shipping is one of the best things you can do.
I love that. So simple, but people miss it, mm-hmm. right? We can thank Amazon for all the free exactly. shipping in the world. But is there anything too? Because I think that there are so many triggers that entrepreneurs miss like that. Like, well, if I just charge $4.99 and mm-hmm. offset it. Is there a way that we can help people break through their own limiting beliefs about this and say, look, 10%, you can't quantify it, right? That's why 10% isn't going to light us up. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to know your opinion on this. I feel it actually devalues your brand yep. when you put 10 or 15%. Can you explain why you feel that is?
Have you ever seen a sale at Gucci?
Nope.
How about Lamborghini?
Nope.
None of the high-end brands do sales. Mm-hmm. Their value is their value. Mm-hmm. And so when you see a brand that's always 10% off, 20% off, 30% off, guess what? The consumer expects that every time. And so now you're addicted to it, mm-hmm. right? If Candy's getting emails from a brand over and over and over, why would she ever buy regular price if Fashion Nova is this price mm-hmm. or Nasty Gal or Boohoo is this price or this company or this brand is that price and it's always 10, 20% off? Well, why would she just wait? Mm-hmm. Why as a consumer, wouldn't she just wait for it to be a discount if she knows every other week or every other month there's a discount? And so we have this mental thing in our mind that we have to provide discounts or we have to do the old school ways. It's not us now. Mm-hmm. Consumers know how to buy. We know what we want and we know how to purchase it. You just have to showcase value to us and we'll buy it.
And then what's interesting is that one action, then what you just went through, drives down their buying frequency,
sure.
drives down their lifetime customer mm-hmm. value, and people don't see it because it's not translating to their bottom line. I think people often think that the discounts are going to create urgency. Is there anything else that an entrepreneur can do to create that same sense of urgency if they don't want to do the discounts because they realize, okay, you guys are right, Dan's yes. right, we're not going to do it. What can they do to create that same sense of urgency in marketing?
Bonus products. Bonus value helps a lot because there's an implied value. Even if something is not that expensive, okay, you're checking out, you're spending the $200 and then someone gives you a free hat. They give you a free shirt. They give you a free duffel bag. Remember when Victoria's Secret gave out the mm-hmm. free bags? Yeah. Girls went crazy over yeah. it. And sometimes they'd go in and out to go buy multiple times to get multiple duffel bags. Mm-hmm. And so free products, free bags, free makeup bags, free whatever, like a free product, mm-hmm. those makeup bags are a few dollars. Mm-hmm. The girl spent hundreds of dollars and she got yep. a bag that cost them $3.40. But the implied value is they got a $30 to $50 bag.
Yep.
Right? And so the concept is giving someone something free in the same category that they would actually utilize, that converts like crazy.
I you know, I don't know if you know this. There's an influencer that, it's funny, my assistant is like an addict. Like, she loves her. She like follows all of her. And she does, she was here in Scottsdale and did a little pop-up. And she does limited edition drops. And then you have to spend so much to get this specific mm-hmm. limited edition shirt. And I was like, wow, how brilliant is her marketing department to figure out, not only do you have the spend threshold,
right.
but it's a spend threshold to buy mm-hmm. something else. Yes. And I'm like, I love this girl. It's brilliant. You work with a ton of obviously spending and affiliate programs. What are some of the things that the average small business owner that's listening can start to use in their business, whether it's leveraging influencers or other types of marketing channels that you've found that's successful?
So influencers, you have to make it easy for them. And it has to be a product category that makes sense for them. And so when someone likes sports and you show them a sports-related product, they will want to post about it. They will want to talk about it. They'll make videos about it because it fits them. That same sports person, you show them makeup, the guy's like, well, I don't wear makeup, right? So how am I going to sell that? How am I going to promote that? It doesn't fit for me. So finding people that fit in your niche, I know it sounds obvious. I can't explain how many times.
But it's not.
Yes. How many times products and brands go after influencers that are not associated with them or in their category or in their niche or even in their world, or in their field. So that's one part. Two is you have to either give them a product that has enough value that they want to post about it in exchange for value, or you just got to pay them. Mm. And people always talk about, yeah, organically they post about me. A one-off story, a one-off Instagram story is not going to convert. Mm-hmm. It's just not. You need someone to make a video or make a photo or make a hard post that explains what it is. If someone just says, I got this brand new bag, and then they put a link in it, can a little bit of people click on it or research it? Or maybe, but mm-hmm. it's up there for 15 seconds on Instagram story.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly enough time for someone, a human, to make a decision that they want to click a link to leave the experience. The experience being swiping through Instagram stories. You got to have something compelling for me as the user, or Candy as the user, to want to click a link that I know is going to take me away from the experience of what I'm doing right now, which is swiping through Instagram stories. Mm-hmm. I'm already getting the feeling that I want. I'm getting the euphoria that I want, right? I'm getting to look through social media and get excitement and like see things. And so if I'm going to make a decision that I'm like, oh, Candy posted about a shirt, click the link. It's a big decision.
Mm-hmm.
So leave what I'm doing is a big decision. I know it doesn't sound like a big decision. It is when people are just, you know, enjoying social media. And so you have to make it something that's compelling, preferably longer than 15 seconds. If you're just giving them a product and you don't have interaction with them, they might send you a thank you shout out for 15 seconds, which will get you some eyeballs. That's not enough for a human to make a decision that's watching on the other side. Now, next thing is, if you just pay them, what do you pay them? Mm-hmm. Well, it's relative to the size of the influencer, the engagement that they have, and if they're in a niche category. Someone that's just really hot or really funny or really what something happened that they went viral, that influencer is going to get a lower rate because their followers are not in a niche category. So let's say the sports product again. Someone that has a million followers for comedy or for being hot or cool or something viral, they're not going to convert that well.
Being hot. It took me a second, but you're 100% right. Right? They're not going to sell a business product.
Correct.
Right. Okay. Sorry. That. Yeah. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I just caught me off guard.
That product, that person isn't going to convert that well. They'll get you a lot of eyeballs, right? That million followers that they have for being hot or buff or cool or sexy or whatever that thing is, they will get eyeballs, but maybe not convert that well. Now, a 20,000 person fitness influencer that's also a trainer at Equinox, they're going to convert really well for that same exact sports product.
Mm-hmm.
And even though they're a much smaller following that's this tiny compared to this one, they're going to convert better because they have a direct following that cares about working out or eating or fitness or sports. And so going after influencers that are in your world and paying them something based on their niche or if they're a large followed person, that'll determine how many eyeballs you get or how many conversions you get.
I love that. And I think what you said just even a few minutes ago was so brilliant of how that is a big decision for the user to just click on a link to leave the platform that they just want to scroll and consume content on.
Yes.
And I actually never thought of it that way. I knew it was obviously a big decision to get somebody to do that, but really they're there and they're on that for a specific reason and they're getting that kind of like juice from being on there. Mm-hmm. So why would they bump off? So it's almost to me, I'm hearing like getting someone to even do a review would be far more beneficial for the product.
That's huge.
That then you can take and take a testimonial to your website and help convert obviously more quickly. But it seems like the link on the stories is really just brand awareness. It's just one more checkbox for somebody to remember. Unless you do it long.
Yeah, unless it's 30 seconds, 45 seconds, where it gives enough time for Candy or I to make a decision to say, you know what? I do want to see that shirt.
Yeah.
I do want to see that basketball. I do want to see that supplement company. You got to give us enough time to make a decision. 15 seconds is not enough time.
Not enough. Oh my gosh. I feel like we could go totally down this whole lane and talk about this for an entire episode. But I want to be able to talk also about wealth and money and some of the other things. And obviously you're one of the youngest or the still youngest person,
still
the youngest that rang the opening bell, which is super amazing. What company was that?
So I trademarked the catchphrase, "Who's your daddy?" So the slogan for clothing, energy drinks, barbecue sets, and all these different things. We went public focused on the energy drink division. We'd already done tens of millions in the clothing space.
Yeah.
And then we focused on energy drinks.
Oh my gosh. I did not know that. So I want to unpack a little bit. You exited that company?
So we were in 55,000 stores from 23 years old to 27 years old. Got into 55,000 stores. And then on the 10-year anniversary, I started May 18th, 1999. I resigned May 18th, 2009.
Oh, wow. Okay. Was that intentional? Were you like, I'm going to start this amazing name. I'm going to put it on all of these products and I'm going to go ring the opening bell.
I was building the plane while I was flying. I had no idea. Yeah. I was 17 and a half years old.
Yeah.
I was a kid in high school making t-shirts and selling them at lunch. And after our first year, we did 1 million. Second year, we did 9.5 million. Third year, we started to really scale in department stores. So I didn't know anything. And then I met investment bankers to help me go public. It took me 2 years and $2 million of accounting and legal fees to go public.
Mm.
Don't recommend it. Boom, go public April 1st, 2005. And then, you know, the rest was history. And so I didn't know. And then around year 8 or 9 is when I started thinking about the 10-year anniversary thing. And year 9, I knew I wanted to do that because I didn't want my whole career to just be the one product or the one brand. And so that's why I decided I'm going to put another feather in my cap and I'm going to resign on the 10-year anniversary.
So it was interesting that you were intentional about your exit. And I find a lot of entrepreneurs miss that. But I want to go back just to, because I feel a lot of people get stuck between 1 to 10 million.
Yeah.
And they have a really tough time breaking into their 8 figures. Mm-hmm. You said you went from 1 million in the first year to 9 million in the second year. And then you started going into stores. What did you strategically do just out of high school to go from 1 million to 9?
I was at every convention. I was at, it's called Magic was the big one. ASR was the Action Sports Retail Show. I would go to every convention, every trade show. I'd go to the Apparel Mart building where all the buyers and sales reps are, the California Mart in downtown LA, same thing in New York. I would just, the Atlanta one, this is before social media. This is before smartphones.
Mm-hmm. I had a business in 1999.
About, right?
I get it.
So this is the year 2000, 2001, 2002. I'm just literally showing up everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to meetings and I'm going to every convention trade show. I'm like, I want to get into Macy's. I want to get into Nordstrom's. I want to get into Steve Madden shoe stores. I had my shirts in the window of Steve Madden for 2.5 years. Just a girl's shirt that was $45 for a shirt back then, for a little tank top, way back then. And so I just wanted to be in certain stores, and I just found every way I could to get into those retail stores, take pictures there. Again, we had MySpace back then. Like, we didn't have social media back then.
Yep.
And so I would take pictures, and then what I would do is every meeting I'd go to, I'd show them the pictures. Hey, look, I'm in Steve Madden in the window. Look, I'm in Nordstrom's. I'm at Miller's Outpost. I'm at this chain. I'm at Mr. Rags in New York. I'm at Dr. J's. I would just like show them pictures of me in stores. And I'd say, how many do you want to order? I never asked if they were going to order. That's how many they were going to order.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they not order? I'm already in this store, this store, this store, this store. How would you not order? And so I was just delusional. I would just walk into every store. And I did that over and over and over and over.
Delusional and naive enough, right? Like, I always feel like when you're that young, because I was 19 when I started my first, it's like you have to be naive enough to think that you can.
Sure.
And I think that that applies so often to entrepreneurs, no matter what your age is. If you're just, if you drop the limiting beliefs of what your environment or your family or your neighbor says about whatever it is that you want to do, and you're just naive and delusional enough to try, it's like anything is possible. How old were you when you rang the bell?
23.
23.
Yeah.
And so then you went on investment bankers. Kind of came in. Yeah. That's obviously a whole process.
Absolutely.
Did that go as well as you had thought, better or worse than you had anticipated?
So it was cool for the moment. We raised 4.5 million, came into us day one. I was like, woohoo, that was great. And literally we got the wire the next day. So like having some funding came in right out the gate, and then our stock went up and things were going on. We had 1,400 shareholders right out the gate, and then thousands, like there's a lot of action, right?
Yeah.
I'm on CNN, I'm on Fox, and I'm a baby, right? I'm 23 years old. And then I learned about what's called a death spiral. And it's an interesting
thing. Please tell us what that is.
Okay. So it's when financial investment bankers are betting against you.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're expecting you to fail. And if you fail, they get your company or worse.
Mm.
And so I didn't know what that meant. And a month or two goes into it, I'm like, wow, why do we have so much pressure on our stock? pressure on the stock means our stock would go up, but then it would go down drastically, or it would go up and then someone would sell a bunch. Mm-hmm. And we're like, who could be selling the stock? Our stock's restricted. Everybody's stock's restricted outside mm-hmm. of the people buying on the open market. And the people buying in the open market couldn't be buying that much. What is happening? And we found out what a death spiral was. And Google wasn't that big a thing back then. So I met with this guy. His name was James Morris. He passed away. But he was like the legend of IPOs and, you know, that whole world. He was like 74 years old. He was like a grandfather figure to me at the time. And I just asked him, like, what the heck is a death spiral? Like, what is all this thing? And there he was like, well, someone has millions of shares and they're just drip releasing it. And anytime your stock goes to a certain price, they have it automated to sell your stock. And so I was like, how do I stop that? He's like, you got to buy them out. Mm-hmm. He's like, but nobody buys them out. I was like, well, how do I buy them out? He said, well, you can strong arm them basically and pay them an amount to make them walk away. You're not going to like it, but it'll make your stock fly because if there's no pressure on your stock, everybody wins. Mm-hmm. And so I was the first one in the entire history of that bad guys that I was able to buy them out. And it was very expensive. It was very difficult, but it was the best thing I ever did because then our stock was strong. Like we were like, when we had a press release, things would happen. When we got into more stores, things would happen. Our financials would come out, things would happen. And we just didn't have that pressure. And
was it one guy?
Well, there was one main character.
Okay.
Actually, it was two main characters that were together. And then they had a whole firm.
And so it wasn't like someone personally.
No.
It was this whole firm
and
that was
by the way, they're not being vindictive. That's just their business model.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they were just betting against us because they're just like, well, how are these kids going to go build
Shorts?
This huge company?
What were they?
It's kind of like that, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
It's more aggressive.
More aggressive. nasty.
Well, a short is someone just waiting around for it to happen versus like making it happen.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So you buy them out. You're then able to go continue to build the company. Obviously cost you probably more than you would have thought at that time.
For sure.
Was the best decision you ever made.
Yeah. It was it was hard. I had to convince basically other investment bankers and other financial guys, hey, let's put a pool of money together to buy up their stock. Oh, by the way, we're going to restrict it. So we're going to take away someone's free trading shares, which they shouldn't have, give them more than they should get for it, overpay for it, and you got to hold it. So that was the pitch I had to create with my investment bankers that were like, we can get through this because of how well you guys are doing as a company. I was in Ralph's, Vaughn's, Albertsons, Smith's, Costco distributors here in Arizona. I had 21 Budweiser distributors. Like we were rocking and rolling. So we should have had a much stronger stock at the time. And we did from like a demand level, except it's called a catcher's mitt. Catcher's mitt is the slogan for it or the catchphrase for it of like, who's going to buy up the stock? Mm-hmm. The problem was the catcher's mitt had a hole in it. And so people were like trying to buy up the stock and then someone else was selling it. Mm-hmm. So when the stock should have gone, let's call it from $1 to $120 or $120 to $150, et cetera, it would just stay at $1 because someone was buying it. And behind the hole, someone was just selling it to keep it there.
Jeez.
And that was, anyways, I could talk about that for hours.
I'm sure that was a pivotal moment, right? We only learn from, if you're not super educated and didn't come from this incredible family that's also done this and now you're doing it, we really only learn from doing.
Yes.
So until you went through that, you would have never known that one was going to happen. Yeah. So in that time, obviously through that and through exiting fully, transitioning out 10 years in, what you're doing now with all of the companies that you either own outright, partially, or investing in, there's so many things that you've learned. And I know people often watch or listening to a show and they're like, well, but I'm not you. I can't do that. I wouldn't know how to go into all of these stores. Or can we maybe share with them? Because I think oftentimes we learn from challenges that people experience and they think, well, Dan has it all figured out. He probably had a great track record and he can do anything. Was there any moments in your journey from 17 till now that you made some mistakes or had some challenges that you thought you weren't going to get out of?
Yeah, of course. We're all learning, you know, I'm learning faster because I'm immersing myself in it and I remove my ego. So I'm constantly asking questions. I'm constantly in the room. I'm still to this day traveling nonstop to every single event. I sit front row listening to my peers. Like I am constantly learning because any little thing changes the whole course of my career. Any little thing changes the whole course of my business. Any trick I can learn, any tip or tool or app or person, I want to immerse myself in. And so, yeah, there's plenty of mistakes. It would take us 17 hours for me to go through mistakes because I'm learning in real life. Mm-hmm. And I try to reduce those by asking a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. I reduce those by going to masterminds, getting coaches, getting mentors, reading books, watching videos. Like immersing myself to learn has reduced my 17 hours should have been 100 hours of mistakes, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
I've reduced it all, but you're still going to have situations. You're still going to have mess ups and accidents. You're still going to have other people that are around you that they don't come through. They make it wrong. They make a mistake. That's still on you though. Mm-hmm. When you're the entrepreneur, the CEO, it's scoreboard's a scoreboard. Yeah. Still you, whether they do it or not. And so, yeah, there's been lots of things along the way that are uncontrollable too. Mm-hmm. When I had Victory Poker, 5 employees and we're worth $65 million. I'm living in Malta by myself, millions and millions and millions, millions and millions of dollars revenue with 5 employees. And I got Dan Bilzerian, DJ Steve Aoki, Playboy Playmates all over the news, nonstop, bah, bah. Tens of thousands of players coming in left and right. Top 5 poker site in the world. Boom, April 15th was called Black Friday. Online poker shut down in America. The FBI seizes my top 3 competitors in the game. It literally says property of the FBI on their websites.
Wow.
So by default, I become number 1, number 2 in the world because I don't get in trouble at all. And
wow.
The scoreboard's a scoreboard. The game is over. The poker industry is over. So my high-flying company worth $65 million, gone in 1 minute. I literally remember at 10:10 in the morning when it happened. And so
wow.
Over the next 4 days, I manually paid back 41,000 players. We had lots, hundreds of thousands that withdrew, but 41,000 that didn't know to withdraw. You know how hard it is to manually pay people back now? Mm-hmm. Imagine over a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, that was a humongous loss. It doesn't matter that it was someone else or my competitor screwed up and they did bad things. Mm-hmm. Scoreboard's a scoreboard. Mm-hmm. The game was over.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to have failures. You're going to have losses. It doesn't matter if you're Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, the legends in the game. Think about the companies they buy for $1 billion and then close.
Mm-hmm.
Invested $400 million, bankrupt. Happens all the time, no matter how much money you have, no matter how much access you have.
Yeah. Let's go back to that moment. What was the time?
10:10 a.m.
Yeah. The whole industry, your multi-million dollar company that was highly profitable
yep.
is gone.
Yes.
What do you do the next day after you pay everyone back? What's going through your mind? What are you thinking? And then most importantly, what do you do next?
So it was an interesting moment because it was Dan Bilzerian that called me at 10:10 a.m. I'm standing. And he's like, where are you? I was like, I'm at the Bellagio. Like, he's like, why aren't you in Malta? I was like, I came here for a meeting at 12 o'clock. I'm meeting with a multi-billionaire. He invented the slot machine loyalty card.
Oh.
So he sold that for $445 million. Wow. He owned the Wheel of Fortune Jeopardy slot machine rights.
Oh my gosh.
He's the legend of gaming,
wow.
right? I'm meeting this gentleman at the Hard Rock Hotel. Never forget it, at 12 o'clock. And so I tell him I'm here for the meeting. I'm going to be flying back. And he was like, the sky is falling. Poker's over. Turn on the news. So I actually have the sports bar turn on the news. There it is everywhere. FBI raids, seizes billions of dollars from these poker sites. I'm like, not me, right? Like I'm on Wells Fargo checking, calling KPMG accounting, like everything okay? Like, yeah, everything's great. So at 12 o'clock, I go there and I'm meeting with this gentleman. His name is Edward Fishman. And I walk in the room. I've never met this guy before. I open the door. He's like, man, you look like somebody died. Doesn't say hi. And I was like, kind of, the whole business just died. He's like, tell me, what is it? And so right away we hit it off, put on the news, and it's literally like every channel. This is major.
Wow.
So he calls Steve Wynn. Like, just call.
Wow.
Steve's all upset because just that same exact month, he had just signed a mega deal with the biggest poker site in the world.
Oh, no.
Just announced it. Big merger, partnership, household name, poker site deal. And he's infuriated. He's like, how did my lawyers not see this? Nobody knew.
Yeah.
Nobody knew. And so even a legend like Steve Wynn, mm-hmm. the legend of all legends, you know, top 3 person in Vegas history, mm-hmm. scoreboard's a scoreboard. And I'll never forget that day. And here's the fun part of the story is Edward actually had me coming there to meet him as a prize for 11 California sheriffs. So I was actually teaching poker and blackjack from 12 to 4 o'clock at the pool of the Hard Rock Hotel with the sheriff department.
Oh my gosh.
And so that was interesting because like one of them kept messing with me, kept clicking his handcuffs, and he kept joking like, yeah, I got eyes on him.
Oh my gosh.
I told them the story right when I saw them. I was like, guys, I'm going to be on my phone a little bit. Here's what just happened to poker. Don't worry, I didn't do anything. You know, like,
oh my gosh.
And so I had to teach them poker and blackjack while my phone's going nuts April 15th.
So you go teach poker and blackjack.
Yeah.
Because this is like so fresh to you. But for someone who hasn't heard you talk about it before, they're like, oh my gosh, what do you do in that moment? So you still go teach.
Absolutely.
You have your phone going off.
You said so fresh. That was a decade ago. I still feel like it was fresh. I can replay every minute of that day because I just lost this humongous company overnight.
So then you've got 5 employees.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You have to tell them this is gone.
Not just that. I got to tell them they still got to work. We got to pay back 41,000 people.
So you got to pay 41,000 people back that you got to all take your personal assets to pay them back from?
We had player funds. We had player funds, yes.
Okay. And so, but manually, you have to pay them all back. Yes. 41,000 people. Yeah. It's insane to think about doing that now, let alone a decade ago. Yes. What's then your next play? That could have, and the reason I want to touch on this is that literally, Dan, I don't know if anybody else is thinking this, but I'm thinking like that could have crippled an entrepreneur for the rest of their life. Absolutely. And you could have adopted an identity that would have prevented you from being successful in anything else. Yes. So to me, it's like such a pivotal moment that you chose to still rise. And I think that entrepreneurs and humans in general have things that come up all the time that they have to decide to still rise. And in that moment, you did. What was the reason that got you back up in the morning to do it all over again? And what did you do next to build it back?
So I have this saying, you can't sit on the floor and cry about it. If I would have done what I should have or could have done, which is cry like, oh man, they messed up. They got in trouble. I didn't do it. Mm-hmm. Wah, wah, wah. And post it everywhere like, I'm so sad and I'm going to jump. Like, this is all over for me. Like, if I would have done that, nobody would have hired me. Nobody would have worked with me. If I didn't sit there and focus on what do I have to do next? Mm-hmm. What I had to do next was get through the hard part. Spend the next 4 days basically not sleeping and manually pay everybody back. Be on the phone with lawyers, accountants, KPMG, and everyone. Like, make sure everything we did was correct. Thank God everything. We never even got a letter. Thank God. Like, make sure everything is perfect and clean so that we can move forward. And then once it's all done, I think I did like 80 interviews those next few weeks because my competitors are all dead or in jail.
Yeah.
They all like literally because they had billions frozen. Yeah. So people were like, a lot of bad stuff was happening because nobody could figure out the government seized billions. So I did all these interviews and I became the good guy in the space because I paid everyone back. It took them years and never to pay people back, four years. And they only did it because they got lucky that they got to pay people back. That's a whole different story. So thank God that they did though. And so what I did was I started reaching out and getting inbound messages about consulting. So I started consulting for land-based casinos, four of them. I started consulting for one of the biggest financial firms in the world and just going through the process of like, I need to make a bunch of money too because what do I do now? I don't have a job. Like I just had all my eggs in one basket. And so I do have PTSD about being all in on one thing. Mm-hmm. I will never be all in on one project. That's why I'm a psychopath now. Like why you see me invest in 43 different companies, have seven different businesses. Because if one, I always say this, I don't want any one thing to hurt me. Mm-hmm. I know that's PTSD from back then since we're having, I'll lay down on the couch. I know that why I talk about
entrepreneur counseling 101.
I know why. I say that line. I literally say, if you think about it, I say, I don't want any one thing that can hurt me.
Yeah.
Because I had something hurt me. Yeah. I had this company that I was passionate about. I'm obsessed with poker. I had all the fun factors of having this really cool, fun company gone in 1 minute.
And you made the right decisions. You had a great viable business. Like you were doing, to me, that's where it could feel like it was robbed from you because it wasn't like you made the great bad decision and it's something you messed up or someone on your team did something and you weren't compliant. It was somebody else that took that down. So the fact that now you've kind of, you have these walls up in a sense, right? Of this fortress of diversity with all of these businesses that you're investing in. I think my question comes to like, what are you most fearful of now? Because that obviously really then you're like, okay, I'm going to have 42 things that I'm investing in and all of these millions from all of these different places. What is your greatest fear now? 2024, Dan Fleischman, multi-millionaire, all these companies. What's your greatest fear now?
Dying too soon.
Hmm.
I had a lot of friends pass away. Yeah. And so I think about a lot of my time. And it's not the fear of dying itself, because that's inevitable. Mm-hmm. It's the fear of like, I got a lot of stuff I want to do. There's a lot of stuff I want to fix in the world. And I'm not saying like in some, you know, fancy altruistic way, but I really think of the function of like our planet, of what could be fixed for homelessness and water and food and just effectiveness for our world. And so I don't want to go too soon from that perspective. And that's why I'm doing so many things to build up the finances, credibility, execution, to be able to do things to help homelessness and help hunger, help shelter, et cetera. And so my fear is like going too soon. And that's why I'm safe. And like, I've never done a drug in my life. So I would like it. And two, I don't want something to happen to me. And so I just never, ever touched it. I don't ever get drunk. Drinking's fun, but I don't want to get wasted and something happen and I get into an accident or a fist fight and something happens and I die or go to jail. I avoid those situations. There's some things I'd like to do. My friend over there, he likes to go skydiving. I would love to go skydiving. Mm-hmm. I don't do it for the tiny 0.1% chance because I just have a lot of stuff to do while I'm here from an efficiency perspective. And so that's my fear is I don't want to die too soon, not from the fear of dying because I just have stuff I really want to get done.
Mm. So you're really mitigating risk, not just in your wealth and in your business, but in your life. Mm-hmm. And that risk mitigation is setting you up then to be diverse in so many things to hopefully avoid any one singular decision mm-hmm. that takes anything down. But let's be real for a moment. You could tomorrow
for sure.
decide to just take what's in your bank account, cash out all on your shares, sell everything tomorrow and not do anything ever again and sail off to some ranch and mm-hmm. enjoy life.
Yep.
But you don't. Why?
The game. I'm addicted to the game. Mm-hmm. Like I couldn't even imagine just going to sit on a beach right now. Mm-hmm. Like you couldn't pay me to go sit on the beach for 3 days. Like physically, it makes me like a little bit weird thinking about it. I want to work. I like the game. I enjoy this action. I don't need a break from it because I like it. Mm-hmm. It's fun to me. The good stuff's fun. The bad stuff's fun. Like I know there's bad stuff. So I just can't even imagine retiring. I'm not going to go play golf. I'm not going to go sit on the beach. And so to me, the retirement would maybe be like, I'm mostly investing mm-hmm. or mostly overseeing and I don't have like all the action that I'm doing day of like managing operations mm-hmm. like I like to be doing right now. But yeah, I'm not going to slow down.
What about the person watching that it's like, well, but he's not balanced. I'm you not. Don't have any.
Never said that.
You're like, nope, I'm not. I love it.
I don't recommend being.
Is this who you are? Yeah. Is this how you're wired? Yeah. Is this what you enjoy doing? Like you literally just left an event, came here, we're walking off this set and you're going and doing a training for your yes, mastermind.
Absolutely.
And are you ever at like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I have to go do this?
I chose it.
Yeah.
I chose to do the speech at 1 o'clock to see you at 2:30, 4 o'clock mastermind call. Mm-hmm. I'm throwing a dinner at 8:30 tonight. I fly back to the ranch tomorrow morning. I have Dan Martell's podcast at the like, boom, 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 mm-hmm. boom. I'm choosing it all.
Yeah.
And that is a part of like when people talk about what is money or what is mm-hmm. power, it's choice of time. Mm-hmm. I'm choosing to be busy. I could just not do anything theoretically. I don't choose that. I want to be busy and I would actually feel sad or weird if it was just a quiet day where I wasn't in action. I don't recommend that. I'm not pitching that. I'm not pitching hustle culture. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying you should work more for your own career, life, family, and future because it's expensive to live and it's going to get more expensive. That's not slowing down. So when I pitch working more or investing more or doing more, it's not for you to be a psychopath like me or to stay up till 2 a.m. It's that there are efficient ways for you to do a lot more. And it could be small increments. Like I said, what if you do 5 or 10 calls a day?
Yep.
That's manageable. I didn't ask you to do 50 to 100. Mm-hmm. If you happen to do 50 to 100, God bless you. You're going to crush it. But like just do a little bit more, a little bit more action. And you don't have to be crazy to do those things because you have to. Life is expensive and it's not slowing down.
I love that you share this, just this concept of not being crazy about it, but doing more. If you're mm-hmm. not getting the result that you want, do more. Like, what is your effort actually coming into this? And I think that that's so powerful because coming from business, you know, prior life business, building actually behind the scenes to doing this, which is still not really a business, but you know what I mean? I noticed that there's this thing on social media that everyone's like, oh, love what you do every day and you should enjoy it. And, you know, build a business around your passion. And I remember coming on the scene thinking like, this is such garbage. Like either this is complete garbage and everyone is just BSing their way to other people to make themselves look good. Or I've done this all wrong for the last 25 years. I love hearing real entrepreneurs who have done it themselves, who started from the ground up, who exited and all of these things talk about that. And you're still doing it today, which I still do it. Can you maybe share your thoughts on some of these concepts that we hear regurgitated and what you think about them or maybe how they're harming entrepreneurs?
So there has to be a reality to it, right? You might love pickleball, but there's only certain ways to make money from pickleball, right? You could be a pickleball coach. You're not gonna make that much money. You could build a pickleball court. That might work out. You might make a pickleball actual paddle. Like you could find something that you like and try to find some business around it. But there's only so many options when you love art or you love podcasting or you love pickleball in that example. So when you do find something, there are ways to do it. If there is something that has a business to it, like I love sports cards. Mm-hmm. Gary Vee and he named Cards and Coffee. I mm-hmm. opened a sports card store. I built something that I like. That was years later, and I had the efficiency and operation to do it. Can you start up and you're like, you're 26 years old listening, and you're like, I would love to open a salon? Of course you can. Mm-hmm. You love to do makeup? Of course you can. Mm-hmm. You find something. The difference, I say, is study everything about the business side of it. There's a thing that you'll hear Jeff Enser talking about because he owns 83 restaurants. There's a stat that says that over 90% of restaurants fail. Mm-hmm. That's true, but over 90% of everything fails. Mm-hmm. From every single category, right? But the reason that most restaurants fail is they're opened up by chefs and people passionate about food, not business operators. Yeah. And so if you're passionate about food and you want to open a restaurant, either get a partner that's someone like Candy and knows how to operate and execute and, mm-hmm. you know, build it, scale it, you know, like do the things, or you learn everything, mm-hmm. like everything about the business before you go open up that pizza restaurant or that taco shop or whatever that thing is that you want to do. Learn everything about the business side or get a partner for it.
Yeah.
And so can you do things that you love? Absolutely. You can. If it's a business category that's an actual viable business and you didn't make up something new and you study everything about it and be fully prepared for it. What I hate to see is when people say, this is the one thing I hate more than anything in entrepreneur culture. Go quit your job and start working on your passion. Who the heck is going to pay my rent with passion?
Mm-hmm.
How? Rich. Rent is expensive. Food is expensive. Yeah. Travel is expensive. Insurance is expensive. Cars are expensive. Having a girlfriend, husband, wife, kids, family are all expensive. Yeah. What you could do is work on the side for 2-3 hours a night on the thing that you like, the side hustle that you like or the passion that you like. That's a lot of hours a month. It's a lot of hours a year. That's 1,000 hours a year, 2,000 hours a year working on the side. Mm-hmm. And then when you can actually make money from and it's working, then you could leave your job. You saved up 6 months of overhead, then you could leave your job. But I'm very blunt to the people that are out there saying, just quit your job and go do what you love and it's okay, sleep on the couch. What if they have kids?
Yes.
What if that entrepreneur has a wife or a girlfriend or a husband or like, what are you talking about? It's literally not real life.
Yep. It's reckless.
And most people, if that happens, they are not going to struggle and fight through it. Mm-hmm. And now you just put them in debt because they're going to go back to work for a job, but now they're 7 months in debt.
Yep.
Go save up 6 months of overhead. Study everything during the 6 months, work 2 or 3 hours on the side, and then you can rip the band-aid off and go try something. And if it doesn't work out, at least you have a cushion to survive. But this notion that you should just stop today and go and tell your boss to screw off and go do your passion, you're going to put a lot of people in debt.
I feel it's so reckless and dangerous, some of the information that I hear, because people want to change their life. They want something different. So they're so hanging on to this hope that, okay, well, maybe this will do it. And then I've seen it where they go do that, or they open the restaurant and they realize that, wait, I don't have the acumen to do these other functions, or I really enjoyed cooking or doing makeup, and now I have to run a business and I hate my life, right? So it's like so important to be intentional about what you're doing. And I 100% agree with the 6 months. Like, you've got to have that cushion so that otherwise you have to put all of that, all those expenses. But imagine the stress on your family and your relationship and your kids. It's so awful. So I want to pivot a little bit just with our few extra minutes here to wealth. I know you have an incredible podcast that we'll make sure to link here for everyone to see and be able to follow you. Share a little bit about all of the businesses, everything you've learned, of what you would be doing right now. Aside of the businesses, is there anything else that you invest in specifically personally?
Yeah. So I like the food and beverage category and consumer products. So over the last 2 years, it's called Elevator Syndicate. We raised $44 million for food and beverage brands and product companies, $3 to $6 million at a time, companies doing $2 to $20 million in sales.
Okay.
And we do it once every 4 to 8 weeks. We find a company and we put in money into that business, whether it's Everbowl or Icon Meals, Skinny Pasta, all these type of brands, we put in $3 to $6 million. I'm obsessed with it because when you get it right in the food and beverage space, you get like 6X, 8X, 10X type multiple. That's huge. So I have a 1-to-1 loss ratio. Let's say we raise $3 million or I put in, whether it's 10 grand, 100 grand, the math is irrelevant to you guys. When you're listening at home, whether you put in 10 grand, 100 grand, whatever you can afford into that thing, the math is the math. I have a 1-to-1 loss ratio. So let's say I put in 100 grand. I can only lose 100 grand. But if I'm right, I can get back 300, 500, 600, 800, $1 million. So I only have to be right X amount of times to pay for a lot of things. I reduce my risk because venture capital says the same stat as restaurants. 9 out of 10 investments fail is what they say. Not for me. I got 43 angel investments and I can barely tell you ones that went bankrupt.
Yeah. Thankfully, not for me either.
Right. So, you know why? Because I reduced my risk.
Yeah.
I only invest in companies doing 2 to 20 million sales. So going from 0 to 2 million, super hard.
Super hard.
Huge failure rate.
Yes.
Going from 7 million to 12 million, whoop-de-doo. That's just, you know, gasoline on the fire, fixing some things. Going from 12 million to 25 million, no problem.
Yep.
I'll do that in year 3. Can it fail? Of course it can sometimes, But for the most part, they're going to make it and I'm going to help them and so are the people around me. And so we've been obsessed investing into consumer products. We invested into a cool table called Blooming Tables that has like plants inside of the table. We find cool, unique products and niches and invest in those or into entrepreneurs that we just believe in, right? They're doing 6 million. We believe in them. Let's help them scale.
Yeah. I love that. I think it's fascinating too, because it's like, yes, the stat is actually 91%. And I only know that because I just did the research for my second book that's coming out. And so it's 91% of all small businesses within their first 10 years fail. But what they don't share is that there are certain revenue benchmarks in which they fail drastically more than others. 0 to 3 million is the most significant space. 3 to 10, 10 to 15, 15 to 25. And then it's more than it's like over 125 million. So there's all of these different revenue benchmarks, but that's why that 0 to 3 is so critical for entrepreneurs to really master. And I think it's brilliant that you're mitigating risk within your diverse portfolio by knowing that stat. So the person watching right now that they're like, okay, this is all great. I'm not 100% there yet. I'm still struggling to get to 3 million or to 10 million. If you woke up tomorrow and everything that you had, it was 10-10, and everything that you had, all 40 plus investments gone, you, no one knows your name, your social media following is gone, nobody's going to pick up your call. The only thing you get to keep is the information in your brain. Tomorrow morning, you got to start putting food on the table for your family. What are the first things you're going to do to build it all back?
I'm actually excited. I'm ready to do it. So immediately, let's say I'm in Phoenix, Arizona, I'm here. I'm going to pick a niche. So let's call it luxury cars.
Okay.
The luxury car niche, I'm now going to go walk, taxi, Uber, whatever I'm allowed to do if I have any money at all to Uber. Otherwise, I'll walk. I don't care. I'll crawl if I have to. And I'm going to go to luxury car dealership and say, hey guys, next Sunday, I'm throwing a luxury car event at this venue. I might not even have the venue yet. And I'm going to go interact with luxury car guys that have a big list of rich people because they sell luxury cars for the last 12 years at that place. I'm going to go across the street to the Mercedes dealership, Lamborghini, Ferrari, and I'm going to go make friends and invite them to my big event coming up next Sunday at X location. Along the way, I'm going to try to find X location, whether it's a hotel ballroom, whether it's a studio, whether it's a fancy place, whether it's a mansion that I go try to get for free and just say, hey guys, guess what? I got all these luxury car dealers coming with their clients. I noticed your listing has been on here for 4 months for your mansion. Would you help pay for the food and drinks? And I'm going to bring you 100, 200 people that are rich to your mansion. Have you noticed I haven't spent a dollar yet?
Yep.
I'm going to go on eventbrite.com or events.com and I'm going to make myself a flyer. You know how much that costs? $0.00. And I'm going to say, mansion party, specifically for the luxury car space. Here's the speaker coming. He's the CEO of Lamborghini in Phoenix, Arizona. And the head of Porsche is coming. And I got myself an event that I spent $0.00 on by literally walking through the streets going to dealerships. And what happens? I'm now going to have all those people that I comp for free, but at the same time, there's a $300 ticket or a $100 ticket or a $500 ticket, whatever ticket I want, to come to this fancy mansion party full of Lamborghinis, Ferraris, and Porsches with all these fancy people. And guess what? People are going to want to buy it. And I'm just going to go out there and DM. I'm going to have 10 followers and 50 followers and 100 followers of people that I interact with. But my followers are going to be the head of Lamborghini, Porsche, Ferrari. I haven't spent a dollar.
Yeah.
And I'm going to work the whole area of Phoenix to load up my mansion party with Ferraris and Lamborghinis and really rich people to come to my event. And guess what? I'm going to hit up photographers and videographers and say, hey, guess what? I can't afford you, but you're going to take content of these Lamborghinis and Porsches and meet the owners of dealerships who would want to hire you. Will you work for me for free and make me content? The night of the event, I'm going to be shaking hands and kissing babies with all these rich people. I'm up on stage holding the microphone. And within 2 weeks, I now know a lot of rich people in Phoenix, Arizona to create a lot of deals and a lot of flow.
That is brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And it almost sounds a little bit like something that you've already done.
Well, I've been throwing free events for years.
Yeah.
Elevator nights. I've thrown 54 times for free. And so I know it works because I did it 12 years ago. So it's not a theory. I had it literally upstairs of a jewelry store. And I went and invited 40 people, which ended up being 155 people. I'll never forget because the room didn't hold that. And all I did was walked around free.
Okay.
Still free 12 years later. I did an all women's event on Friday at the LA Convention Center, all women speakers. And so I literally walked around downtown LA and invited them to upstairs of a jewelry store. Oh And then at the same time, a couple football players from the San Diego Chargers committed. And then I started telling people, guess what? Some of the Chargers are coming. The real estate guys wanted to come. The car dealer guys wanted to come. The jewelry guys wanted to come. The football players heard about it, told their friends that all these real estate jewelers are coming. A bunch of girls heard about it, like, whoa, it's going to be a bunch of people that are going. And all of a sudden, it went from 40 people to 155 like that.
Wow.
I had 5 days notice on throwing the event. I'll never forget. I still have the videos of it.
Wow.
And that built my network in San Diego because I'm holding the microphone interviewing famous running back from the San Diego Chargers and all these jewelers in the room and real estate people in the room. And boom, I become in the mix.
Did you sell anything at that first one?
Well, yeah, the jewelry that was downstairs.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Wow. Was that, it wasn't your store though.
That was my store.
That was your store. Yes, gosh. That's awesome. So in brick and mortar, it's like that was a marketing moment where you had people come in and then you sell them the jewelry. Yes. And then now here you are doing that in a different concept. Elevator nights. Tell people what is the offer there?
Nothing. We don't sell anything. It's free.
Nothing.
No tickets, no sales, no sponsors, nothing. Just it's a free event. It's like my way to get people in communities to meet with each other. And I typically do it the night before a big event. So whether it's Grant throwing his huge event, whether it's Aspire Tour, the night before Aspire Tour, like one of our events, I'll basically piggyback from the fact that everyone's in town and I'll throw a free event the night before. That way I know a lot of speakers are in town.
Right.
So like for the women's event, Lisa Bilyeu, Lori Harder, Jen Gottlieb are all speaking. Like these are people I would normally pay a lot of money to speak, happen to be in town and wanted to support my free event. And so I've had laundry list of speakers over the years for free. Speaking at the free event, it's just my excuse to get everyone together, entrepreneurs and investors to hang out with each other.
That's so awesome. I have one final question for you, and then we're going to tell everyone how they can find you. Signature question we ask everybody on the show. Okay. We talk a lot about business and investing and wealth, and I believe that the definitions of those words over time change for people. So I'd love to know, what does the definition of wealth mean to you now?
Time management.
Hmm.
I get to choose everything in my life. I get to choose where I go. I get to choose when I go. I get to choose how I go. I get to choose for other people their time. I get to choose and manage time. And the wealthier you get, the more access you get, the more powerful you get, the more time management you can do for people in your life, people you work with, your family, your friends, to make them spend time to do things, or vice versa, reduce time for them. Meaning, if I want to reduce time for someone that's in my household, like, hey, mom, you don't need to clean because let's do this and this. I'll bring in a maid. Hey, I don't want you to go fix the car. I know you could, but why don't we hire a mechanic to do that?
Yeah.
I know you really want to do mowing the lawn, but maybe we'll bring in a gardener for XYZ. So I can either reduce time for helping people inside my household or my friends, family, employees, or I could make important time, meaning, hey, let's go on a trip. Hey, let's go to this place. Hey, let's go to this experience by spending the money. And so for me, money is time management for reducing time or increasing time and creating memories.
I love that. I love that. Thank you for everything that you shared with the audience today. And how can we support you? How can people find out more about you? What's the best place to find out more and engage with you?
All my social media is the same. It's just my name, Dan Fleischman. Also, for you guys listening, you should have the same bio, same photo, same picture for all your social media. Try to have the same screen name. Support-wise, Wild Jungle. So we have an animal sanctuary with 209 animals. So you can support the Wild Jungle. It's WYLD. And then we have a charity called Trina's Kids Foundation. That's the founder sitting over there. We throw the world's largest toy drive. We've done 10 years of toy drives. The last 3 years in a row, we broke the Guinness Book World Records for the largest toy drive. And so, yeah, Trina's Kids Foundation, things like that.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Thank you for everything that you're doing. Obviously, I love Wild Jungle because you know I'm a huge animal person. So thank you for all the good work that you're doing and how you're taking wealth and really creating a huge impact.
Thank you.
Appreciate having you here. Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to this episode. And if there was something that you loved or you had a specific takeaway, share it and tag me at Candy Valentino. And if you haven't yet, grab your copy of Wealth Habits everywhere books are sold. And for upcoming events or ways to stay connected, head over to candyvalentino.com. That's all for today. Thanks so much for tuning into the show. We'll see you next time.